This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
This is Sean from the Gunblog Variety Cast. Unlike Bob, I was in the military, but that was a long time ago. Now what I need is a practical podcast from a practical guy. That's why I listen to Bob Main's Handgun World podcast on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode 408, and I'm your practical host, just an everyday guy, no military or law enforcement background, no gunsmithing background, just an everyday dude taking my Second Amendment rights very seriously. This episode, I am really pumped up to talk about a three-day red dot sighted pistol class that I took. And I've got an interview with Dr. John Adeen coming up. You've probably heard Dr. John Adeen on this podcast before. You've heard him on many others. And he's also been a speaker at the Gun Rights Policy Conference. He's an orthopedic surgeon, a pediatric orthopedic surgeon here in San Antonio, Texas. And he's also the membership director for Doctors Responsible for Gun Ownership. John took the class with me. And for the most part, he was kind of like my training partner during the class. We, you know, shot a lot in relatively close proximity to each other and talked about a lot of what we learned during the breaks and things like that. So I got a couple of interviews with Dr. Adeen from the range at the class. That'll be coming up towards the last half of this episode. Hey, I have a defensive gun use that I want to talk to you about. I don't get a lot of emails from listeners telling me about when they had to use a gun to defend themselves, but I got one. I get a lot of emails from listeners and a lot of voicemails with questions and things, but get this. This comes from a listener named Bill. He said, "Hey, Bob, I just listened to episode 401 where you said you had LASIK eye surgery in 1999. He said he had it too. He said, "I'm 10 years older than you, though, and in September of 2015, an intruder entered his house at 1 a.m. He took a paring knife from the sink and attacked me from behind." Bill goes on to say, "The first thing that happened was I found myself on my back with him trying to shove something into my eyes. I found later he had broken my safety glasses. The knife blade also broke. And so what made me think of telling you was your suggestion of shooting practice without glasses." Yeah, I've talked about that. I talked about that in episode 401, and I talked about that in previous episodes, practicing without wearing your eyeglasses. Bill says, "I can still maybe see 20/40 without my glasses, which is far from perfect." So he said the short version of the story is he shot the guy in the left elbow, shattering his elbow. The 38 caliber bullet went into his side, then down into his buttocks. You remember Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump calling it the buttocks? And Bill says the 38 caliber still sits in the bad guy's buttocks. Anyway, he says, "I got off easy with some cuts. The bad guy's in a New Jersey state prison for the next 10 years. And he says, "So I love your show." And it's Bill from New Jersey. So thanks for the defensive gun use. I appreciate that story, Bill. I don't get these often. This was kind of cool to get this one. I'm sorry this happened to you. I'm sorry this happened to you, but I'm glad it had a good ending for you. Thank God you had a gun. You had access to a gun and you hit the bad guy. It's vitally important that you practice and train for all the different types of situations. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. A gunfight is a fight. And even before you go to your guns to settle the fight, you may get in a wrestling match with the guy. You might get into a punching match with the guy. Who knows? If you wear glasses like I do, and many of the listeners that I have wear glasses, your glasses may get knocked off of your face. Can you shoot and can you make hits? Have you practiced without wearing your eyeglasses? Okay? When I used to wear contacts a lot, I used to sometimes lose my contacts when I was doing different types of activity. As contacts got better, they didn't come out as easily. But especially for those of you that wear eyeglasses, practice that. So the last day of the Red Dot Pistol School, I never wore my corrective eyeglasses. I wore my safety glasses instead. I wore my shooting safety glasses that have no prescription in them at all. And I did just fine. I did just fine. It went back to being a completely in focus iron sight picture and a blurry target. The interesting thing is that the red dot looked a lot different. And you're going to hear about that coming up in my interview with Dr. John Adine. I had to adjust the intensity of the red dot because I have an astigmatism in my eyes. And, of course, my glasses correct the astigmatism, but without my glasses, it's not corrected. So I had to adjust the intensity of the red dot. But even if you're not shooting a red dot pistol and you're just shooting a regular iron-sighted pistol, everything's going to look different. Practice that way and be able to be effective with and without your eyeglasses if you do wear corrective glasses. And the last thing I want to say about corrective glasses, you know, some people get these shooting glasses where the bifocal lens is actually at the top of their lens, at the top of their glass lens. Eyeglass lens, you know, so that gives them a crisp, clear front sight while they're shooting. Okay, are you going to be wearing those all the time? Are you going to be wearing those special shooting glasses all the time? Those are for playing games. And if you want to wear those for playing gun games, fine. I don't believe that those are for self-defense. You're probably not going to be wearing those, and you're probably not going to be able to get the time nor the permission from the bad guy to go ahead and put your special shooting glasses on before you shoot him to stop him from trying to hurt you, maim you, rape you, or kill you. All right, enough said on that. So just a quick sound effect or something like that, and you'll hear me reviewing the first day while I was in the Handgun World Mobile Studio. And then after that, you're going to hear two consecutive interviews with Dr. John Adine at the range where we review the second day and the third day. Good stuff coming right up. So in this segment, I'm going to go ahead and review the first day of Red Dot Pistol School taught by John Payne of Suarez International. I'm in the Handgun World Mobile Studio. My 2006 4Runner, which, man, I'm loving this thing. I'm glad I bought this. And, you know, this is a 2006 4Runner with the 4.7 liter V8, and that's the biggest reason I bought it is because I heard a lot of good things about these V8 engines. You know, they probably take a little bit more maintenance than the V6s that Toyota uses in their 4Runners, but I really like it, and Toyota doesn't put these V8s into 4Runners anymore. I think they stopped doing it back in 2009. If my budget allows, next year I think I'm going to try to buy another one of these just because of the good V8 engine in here that I can't get anymore in these. But I'm becoming sold on SUVs again. I used to drive, you know, midsize SUVs all the time. Used to do it all the time, long before I started doing the Handgun World podcast. And then, of course, I, you know, bought my little 2002 Honda, and you know the story there. That was the Handgun World Mobile Studio. Very sentimental to me. It's too bad it got all smashed up, and now it's in the junkyard someplace. But, hey, sometimes that's a car's life, isn't it? Okay, so on the way to day two of Red Dot Pistol School here in San Antonio, Texas. Balverde, Texas, to be exact. Let's talk about day one. John did a good job of getting us through the basics in day one. And one of the things that I take away, one of the biggest takeaways and the keys in shooting a pistol with a red dot is we spent a lot of time shooting with the red dot RMR turned off or with tape over the emitter so we couldn't see a dot. And that was to get us to learn to use our iron sights on the pistol. Why learn to use the iron sights on a pistol with a red dot? Because when you learn to just shoot the gun just like you used to shoot your gun in the past with iron sights on it, as soon as you find the sight, you found the red dot. Boom, there it is. Because the red dot sits right on top of the front sight. And so you're co-witnessing. And so, boom, there it is. There's your dot. A lot of people say, well, the red dot pistols slow me down because I'm hunting for the dot. And I found myself doing that at first. You know, the first 100 to 150 rounds of the class, you know, I was kind of like a little upset. I'm like, hey, I can't find this stupid dot. Where is it? I'd bring that pistol up, you know, nice draw, nice press out towards the target. And no red dot. I'm like, where is it? Where is it? Where to go? And I'm moving the pistol around trying to find the stupid red dot. That was my mistake. You can't learn to shoot these red dot pistols that way. You got to just find your index point and get the gun out there. Look for your sights as if you have a iron-sighted pistol, and boom, all of a sudden, in a split second, there's that nice red dot I've been looking for and hunting around for. It shows up. So I got to work on that again today because that is the key. And it can be just as fast, if not faster, because the cool thing, here's what I noticed. I noticed that once I got used to looking for the sights and getting that red dot right there where it's supposed to be, then my eyes focus on the red dot. That's all they do is they just focus on the red dot, superimpose it on the target, press the trigger, and bang. And it goes where you want it to go. Mine's not completely zeroed yet. I think I'm going to work on that today. My bad. I just didn't get a chance to get to a range before the class and get it zeroed. You should do that. Don't make the mistake that I did. But I'll spend some time. It's not that difficult to zero these. But it's pretty close. When I got it from Suarez International, when it came back to me in the box, the thing was pretty much almost zeroed already. Almost. Now, the one thing I'm going to do is I like the suppressor sights, the suppressor height sights that are on it. But I don't like I got the tritium version, and I think I'm going to buy just the straight black-on-black version. In the bright sunlight, like we had yesterday and like we're probably going to have today here in San Antonio, that tritium washes out. Now, the white dots is what I'm talking about. They wash out. They're way too hard to see. So I am going to most likely switch these out for either black on black or see if I can find a black rear and a fiber optic front. But I just think black on black is probably going to be good enough. You know, hey, back when I first started shooting, like especially competition, IDPA competition, I was using a pistol. Well, I was using a 1911 when I first started shooting IDPA that had black on black sights. And then when I switched to Glocks, both of my Glocks when I was shooting competition had black on black sights. The old fashioned way, right? I can see those fairly well. But I have to say, I really do like to have either a red or an orange or a green front sight with a completely black rear sight. But anyway, let's get back to red dot pistols. I'm really becoming sold on the concept of having a red dot sight. Now that I'm actually training and practicing with it, I really see the benefits. You know, I'm 55 years old. And just like when I was talking with my friend Chuck Boylan a few weeks ago, and you hear a lot of people say this, you know, when you're my age, your eyesight, you either have to normally, most people are either wearing glasses, wearing contacts, or they had to have some kind of corrective eye surgery. The few and the fortunate my age that still have perfect eyes, God bless you. Many of us don't, though. And I wear progressive glasses. And every single pistol I have, no matter what sight I put on them, the sights are blurry. And I've learned, you know, after reading Grant Cunningham's article and interviewing him on my show about shooting with you know, middle-aged eyesight and blurry sights, I learned how to do it. It's not that hard. I mean, my shooting did not deteriorate just because my sights are blurry. You just learn to superimpose blurry sights on a nice, sharp, in-focus target. You know, the target focus is probably the most important anyway. So I learned it. Well, guess what? With the red dot sight, that dot's nice and clear. And I'm like, hallelujah, this is great stuff. A clear dot. How about that? I couldn't believe it. When I first started shooting, I'm like, oh, look at this. I got a clear dot. I can see something in focus on top of my pistol. Oh, I was thrilled. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay. This is good stuff. If I can learn to master this, I got myself a nice clear red dot. And just like with my AR-15, all I got to do is put that dot where I want the bullet to go and nice and cleanly press the trigger with good trigger control. Boom! That's where the bullet goes. How about that? You know, it's cool. And another cool thing is that this gun, this Glock 19 that I have here with the red dot, Trijicon RMR, fits in my Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster. How about that? That's even better. You know, the Cobra holster that I really, really like. One of the best outside the waistband holsters for any pistol. It really conceals the pistol very, very well for an outside the waistband, very comfortable and fast draw holster. The Cobra by Concealment Solutions. ConcealmentSolutions.com. A sponsor. I can't talk today. Wow, my voice is cracking. A sponsor of the Handgun World podcast, and the coupon code Handgun World will give you 10% off of your order at Concealment Solutions. So it fits in the holster, and that's nice. I didn't have to go out and buy a new holster. I'm probably going to anyway, though, because I want to get an appendix carry holster for this gun with a red dot. I do have a holster on order that I'm getting soon from Spencer Keepers, from Keepers Concealment, but it's not for a red dot pistol. I'm going to just try it for a regular iron-sided Glock 19, and then if I like it, I am going to probably get the appendix carry version. I'm probably going to take Spencer Keeper's class out at the Tactical Conference. I'm going to the Rangemaster Tactical Conference next month, the Tom Givens Rangemaster Tactical Conference in Little Rock, Arkansas. I will be there. And I think Spencer Keeper's appendix carry class is one that I want to take. See, I'm working on training a lot, folks. Something's going on with my voice. I got some allergies going on, I think. And anyway, I'm working on training a lot this year, folks. You know, I made a promise in episode 400. When Ben was on episode 400 with me towards the end of December. You remember? How many of you remember the promise I made? How many of you remember the commitment that I made for 2017? And I talked about it in episode 400, and I asked Ben Branham to be my accountability partner. What was the promise? Anybody remember it yet? No new guns for 2017. For me. Ah, it's hard. It's hard. No new guns. Now, I may just very slightly break my promise. Just very slightly, and here's what I'm talking about. I might exchange one gun for another. So see, that's not really adding a new gun to my collection, is it? Right? It's not a net gain of one gun. You see how I'm justifying this? I really want to get one of those Second generation Glock 17s with the grip cut down to a 19 size grip from Aim Surplus. I got my name on the list. One of the students at the class this weekend had one, and I got a chance to, you know, put my hands on it and dry fire it a little bit. That's cool. It's cool. I like it. I do kind of like that concept. You know, Paul Carlson talks about that a lot. Paul Carlson at the Safety Solutions Academy, that's what he carries. He carries a Glock 17 with a Glock 19 size grip because it aids in concealment. But you still get the benefits of having the longer slide, the longer sight radius, the balance, the way that it carries, sometimes a little bit better, actually, than just carrying a Glock 19. So if I can get a hold of one of those pistols from Aim Surplus, I am going to find a new home for one of the pistols I have. But that's the only gun transaction I would consider doing here in 2017. I almost said 1917. Hey, how cool is that? Right? No. In 2017, that's probably the only purchase that I would consider doing. Just because that's so unique to try to be able to buy one of those pistols. They're police trade-ins, I believe. And I think they're only like $350. But Aim Surplus is out of stock at that price. I can see why they're out of stock. I'm sure they sold real quickly. If they get more in, I'm going to snap one of those up and find a new home for something else that I have. Because, you see, I operate on a tight budget, folks. Let me just say this. I'm not hurting for money yet. We'll see what my wife's nursing home bills are. At the end of the day, we'll see how much of my wife's nursing home bills I have to pay. But the good Lord has blessed me with a real good job and making real good money. And He's blessed me with some good skills to be able to do that in my real job. And I'm not trying to brag. It's a blessing. It's a blessing. It's a gift. It's a gift that's been given to me. But I still put myself on a budget. Even though I have a surplus at the end of every month to invest and save and give away, because I believe in tithing and giving away to charity and investing and saving and living on only about 80% of my income, so with the other 20% I can save and give away to charity and give back to God. That's my belief, and that's what I really try real hard to do every single month. So I'm still on that budget. So going out and putting out the money for a new pistol without replacing that money by selling something else, doing that is just not in the budget and in my plans this year. I got plenty of guns. Plenty of guns to keep me satisfied and to defend myself and me and my family if the stink hits the fan and I need to do it, or if I just want to go out and play, like at these training classes or IDPA competition or whatever. So 2017 for me is the year of training and teaching. The year of training and teaching for me is 2017. And of course, you'll get to hear about it on the podcast. And if you attend a class that I'm teaching, which Ben Branham and I are teaching a lot of them, a lot of Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced 2-day classes this year. Check it out. We're coming to you. Might be coming to your area. We're coming to Dallas. We're coming to Utah. We're coming to Illinois. We're going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We're going to Ohio. Check it out, handgunworld.com. If you go to handgunworld.com, you can't miss. There's all the class listings right there, descriptions and everything. Hurry up. There's some early bird specials that are going to expire pretty soon, especially for Dallas and for Salt Lake City, Utah. There's some early bird specials that are going to be expiring pretty soon. So go ahead and get signed up if you're thinking about doing that. But I'll share with you some information. And I'll share with you some of the techniques that I'm learning in all the training classes that I'm taking. Giving full credit as to where I learn the material from. Ben Branham and I are real good at doing that. Whenever we teach something, if it's something that Ben Branham and I kind of came up with on our own, we say so. If it's something that we learned from somebody else, we give credit to that other training school and promote that training school. See, I really believe that, you know, we all share in this great benefit of people that own guns that want to learn how to use guns. And there's room for everybody in this marketplace, and we all help each other out. And I am a huge proponent of other people's training classes, too. This is why I talk so much about taking Masada Yub courses. It's why I talk so much about taking Tom Givens classes, which I've taken both of those. And I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of good endorsements to talk about once I go to the Tactical Conference next month, the Rangemaster Tactical Conference. I'd like to take a Rob Pincus course, too. I don't know if I'm going to be able to fit that in this year, but I'd like to be able to take one of his classes. And there's a lot of good training out there. Here's what I believe about training. See, I used to be in the training business for salespeople. When I was a youngster, 25, 26, all the way up until I was about 32. I became an old man, see, when I was 32. Got married and started raising a family when I was 32. So, became an old man. When I was a youngster, I was in the sales training business. I'm wound up this morning, folks. It's a Saturday morning, and I've had a bunch of coffee, and I'm headed out to go shooting all day. I'm pumped up. That gets me excited when I get to drink a bunch of coffee in the morning and go out shooting all day. Whew, man, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be 85 degrees in San Antonio today. 85 degrees on February 18th. How about that, huh? Isn't that cool? That's why I live in South Texas. 85 degrees on February 18th. Yeah, I know it's 105 in August, but this time of the year is why we like living here. Because we don't get winters. Our winters are kind of like, you know, a spring. You know, 85 on a Saturday, February 18th. So, it's pretty cool stuff. So, anyway, do get some training on the guns that you own, or at least the ones that you're going to carry. Get some training. Shoot them a lot. Shoot a lot of rounds through them. Any gun you're going to carry, as I've said for a long time, for all the years I've been doing this podcast, pretty much a little over 7 years I've been doing the Handgun World podcast. Give every gun that you carry a 1,000-round trigger job, and I think you should probably up that to about 1,500 at least. 1,000-round trigger job. You've heard me say it before. If you haven't, if you guys don't know what a 1,000-round trigger job is, go to handgunworld.com and in the search bar, just put that in there, 1,000, the number 1,000-round trigger job. You'll find an entire episode that I did on the 1,000-round trigger job. Get some training. Get some training. It's amazing. It's amazing how many people really, really think that they really know exactly what to do and how to use their gun and how to defend themselves. But wow, you know, the scenarios that they could find themselves in really makes me wonder how well could some of these concealed carriers actually perform. You know, folks, here's the sad truth, and this is the way I'm going to finish this segment. Many of the bad guys have more training than the good guys with guns. Yeah. I'm not saying the bad guys go to formal training classes. You know, maybe sometimes they might sneak into them, but I hope not. Hope that's not happening much. Their training is street training. They get their training on the streets. Street fighters. And yeah, their firearms training on the streets. And they learn to become street fighters with guns or knives or clubs or whatever it is that they get their hands on. Now, ask yourself a question. Can you go up against a street fighter? Can you go up against an experienced street fighter that might attack you? Do you have the training skills? Your concealed carry class didn't teach you that. What if you live in a state where you don't need to take a class to get a license to carry. So you got no training. Unless you've taken some other kind of training. So you got nothing, and you're going to go up against a street fighter? God bless you. That's all I'm going to say. That's it. You're probably going to need God's help in that one. I'm telling you, folks. You go up against an experienced street fighter that know what they that really know what they're doing. You're going to need some divine help in that one, I think. That's it. That's the way I'll end this segment. Well, I'm with Dr. John Adine. We are we just completed the second day of Red Dot Combat Pistol School. John, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back with you guys. It's been a little while.
It has been a little while. This Red Dot School, I wanted to bring you on to do a review because, you know, it's really opened up my eyes on some things. But so far now, after 2 days, what do you think?
Well, I think that the Red Dot is a tool that most of us probably have not explored, and we really need to. Especially us guys with the older eyes. It's really about being able to superimpose the dot over your threat. And being able to make the hits without having to get crazy about your sights. One of the things that we learned, and we both were surprised at that, about you can have that dot anywhere in that window, and as long as you put that dot on the target, that's where the round's going to go.
Yeah, the first day I did not know that. John didn't teach it until today, the second day. That where I could just, as long as I see the red dot on the target, it doesn't matter where in the screen or where in that glass that the red dot appears. I didn't know that. Once I figured that out, I got so much better with it.
Right, and it increases your speed. Yep. Because you don't have to get as precise if you have to line up your sights. You just put the red dot over the meat, press the trigger, and you get your hit.
Now, speaking of lining up sights, my problem the first day, and the reason why I had a good time the first day and learned a lot, but I was getting a bit frustrated because I found myself chasing the dot. I found myself putting the pistol out there. Oh, where's the dot? Where's the dot? Where's it? Oh, there it is. Bang.
I think that's a common experience that we all had. I think if you're not used to running that dot, you're trying to find the dot, and then you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to be precise, the dot's dancing all over the place. You don't have to get that crazy.
And what's the fix for that?
It's just, get the dot where it needs to go in a nice, smooth, steady trigger press.
Well, John taught us that when you draw the gun and you present it, go ahead and look for your iron sights.
Right, right.
And by looking for your iron sights, boom, there's the dot.
Right.
And I found myself by the end of the second day automatically finding the red dot.
Yeah, I'm still working at that. You have a lot more presentations under your belt than I do, I think. And that's
I don't really have any more presentations of what we did here at the class, but
But in general.
Oh, in general.
I mean, a general presentation, you know, because you have to get that the gun, you know, parallel to the ground, your sight, you know, eye behind the gun. And I'm not used to running a Glock 17. I usually run a little shorter gun. So if I'm a little bit off, I'm a little, you know, it's harder for me to find that dot.
Yeah, and I'd like to say to listeners, when you get your red dot, you got to dry fire a lot. The first thing you need to do is you need to come to a class like this, because you learn so much about the little nuances when you come to a class like this. But even before you come to the class, dry fire, dry fire, dry fire, dry fire.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And the other thing that you learn is the kind of the care and feeding of your red dot. There's a lot that goes into it as far as, you know, details, like putting a little bit of blue Loctite on your screws, and there's some tricks if you're having battery issues, and, you know, how to clean the screen properly so you don't damage your red dot. Those things are very durable, but they can also be damaged if you use the wrong stuff on the
screen. You know, that happened to me. My dot was moving to the left on me, and I couldn't figure it out why. I would take a shot, and it would move to the left. And then I would take another shot, and it would move to the left again. And so I gave it to John Payne, and he took a shot, and it moved to the left, and he thought, hey, there's something wrong here. But then we figured out, after I took the top end off the gun...
Bob had a screw loose.
Everybody knows that I've had screws loose. So, I've had screws loose for years.
Guess what? I did, too.
Yeah. So, because the mounting screws were loose, of course the dot was drifting. So we put a drop, one drop, right?
Right.
One single drop
and let it dry a little bit before
of blue.
Blue.
Not red, blue.
Right. If you put red Loctite in, when you try to take them off, you shear the screws off.
Yeah.
And then you got a problem because you're going to have to mill those things out. You're going to need a gunsmith or somebody to get it out. And John told the story about that happening, and it took them 3 hours to get the two screws out and get the thing, you know, serviceable again. So
after we Loctited mine in and let them set, it never moved again the rest of the day. It fixed. Problem fixed.
Right. And the other thing is that a new battery isn't always a new battery.
Oh, you found that out.
Yes, that was the other thing. I put a new battery in my RMR a couple of weeks ago, and I've been shooting it a little bit. But today, it wasn't working. I think my screws were a little bit loose, and I had a battery that didn't was already kind of worn out. I think so. You got to look at the dates on your batteries. Make sure you get ones that are not. Haven't been sitting there on the shelf for a while.
Yeah. Look at the date on your batteries for sure. You know, my big takeaway, because John asked us this near the end of the day, he asked us what was one of our big takeaways. Mine is this. I got a feeling that by the time the class is over tomorrow at 5 o'clock, I am not going to want to shoot my iron-sighted pistol much anymore.
I think you're right. I think a lot of us, again, you know, with our middle-aged to senior eyes, we're starting to need something. I have a hard time focusing on the front sight. You know, some people have these glasses where the bifocal's on top. You know, I guess that's a solution.
But no, it's not, because they don't wear those all the time.
I know, that's the problem. It's a solution for games, but it's not good for walking around
town.
Right,
I mean, the bad guy's not going to let you put the correct glasses on before you pull the trigger.
And seeing that front sight is getting harder and harder as my eyes mature. And I think it's really a revolution. And tomorrow we're going to be doing shooting from odd positions, which I think the red dot is really going to shine in that.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow when we're done doing that. Yeah, one of the things I learned with the red dot, you know, being able to put that dot anywhere on the glass screen, well, that just really widens the field of vision big time.
Right.
When you're trying to shoot fast, it really widens the field of vision. You don't get that advantage with regular iron sights.
Right. And when we were shooting speed shooting, you know, that was a thing. All I did was, as soon as I saw that red dot over the cardboard, boom, boom,
correct,
boom, 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 boom.
Same
boom,
with the steel.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, with the steel.
As soon as I see the red dot on the steel, pressed it. Now, here's the thing. You have to still have a good trigger press.
Right.
These red dots on pistols do not compensate for poor trigger control.
Yes, I would agree with that wholeheartedly, because Bob's laughing at me because that's exactly what I was doing about half the day today. I was just doing anticipating and just dumping the shots low. And
yeah,
I was like, there's something wrong with this thing. And John Payne's like, pow, 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 right in the center of everything. I go,
I saw that.
I guess that's me.
And,
all right, it's on me.
And now I see what my good friend Chuck Boylan was talking about a few weeks ago. With the 50-yard shots, when we were doing the 50-yard shots, oh man, the red dot makes it ridiculously easy.
Yeah, no, it was until my, that's when my RMR went.
That's when your RMR kind of died a little bit.
So I had to do iron sights at 50 yards, and I still made my hits, which I thought was pretty good.
And go ahead and tell the listeners why your RMR died.
Oh, because I had a screw loose and I had a battery that was crapping out.
You had a battery that was crapping out. And because they are electronics and because they are technology, yes, there are failure points. But in this class, John's teaching us how to avoid some of those failures.
And also to diagnose them. If you start to have a failure, what do we need to do?
Well, and one of the things, either get from Suarez or straight from Trigicon on my Amazon store, get the RMR maintenance kit. The RMR maintenance kit's got just about everything you need. Get yourself a tube of blue Loctite, which I think is in that maintenance kit. And if you have a Glock MOS like you have, what do you need?
Yeah, there's a base plate that goes underneath the RMR, and it's in addition to the plate that comes with the pistol. So there's a little thin plate that goes between the RMR and the base plate that hooks into the slide itself. If you don't have that, those screws are just a little long, and it starts to lift the RMR up. So you need to have, and those are available either through Suarez, or you can get them through the manufacturer, Trigicon, or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever, you know, dot you're putting on. We're not The reason I'm using Trijicons because I had a couple ACOGs with the RMRs on them. I said, well, geez, why should I buy another RMR? I already got two. Let's just cannibalize them off the rifles. And sure enough, why not?
Yeah.
That works great.
Yeah, it does. The key is, one thing I learned is you also have to have the right size screws. And when you buy the RMR maintenance kit, it's got the right size screws.
Right.
If you don't have the right size screws, then you got the issue that you
right.
have.
And then, you know, I got a Suarez slide that was milled, and that comes with a bunch of extra screws and has the plate and all that kind of stuff. Nice slide. I really like it. You know, and I think it runs real nice.
I think I'm going to do that next. I sent my slide in and had it milled and the RMR mounted. I sent a Glock slide in. I think I'm going to get one of the Suarez match slides and try that, because I like the beveled front, and I like the cocking serrations in the
right,
front of the slide.
Yeah, if you, like when you do a press check.
Yeah, it makes press checks really, really super. All right, John, I'll give you the last word.
Well, you know, I am the membership director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, so I have to put in a plug for my organization.
Please do.
Yeah, we're an organization of healthcare providers and healthcare professionals, and our job is education. We talk about Second Amendment issues as it relates to healthcare. Also, we're the anti-Bloomberg. We put out blog posts twice a week on our website, drgo.us. And also, we're on Facebook, and there's often sometimes one or two posts a day on Facebook where we comment on articles and just put stuff up for conversation. It's a great organization, and it's growing, and we need to have more membership so we can be able to start affecting things. We've done things like we did an amicus brief for the Wolfschlager case, which just was ruled on in Florida, unfortunately not entirely in favor of us. However, you know, there's still room to go up the chain into the Supreme Court if we need to do that.
Wow.
And you know, and it's all about the boundary violations that some of the doctors, where they start asking you questions about your firearms.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't know anything about safety. All they know is they want you to get rid of your guns or to store them with your gun in one place and your ammo in another place. Of course, that makes the firearm useless if somebody's breaking into your house. So how are you supposed to defend yourself or your family?
So all they really know is talking points.
Right, exactly. And you know, there's no such thing as, you know, gun safety in medical school, okay? That class doesn't exist. It never has, and I doubt it ever will. I did a military residency in orthopedics. Guess what? We never talked about gun safety there either. So, you know, I mean, this is the kind of thing that we're dealing with. It's a great bunch of people. We're involved in, you know, a gun rights policy conference. We usually have, you know, several speakers at that.
Including you.
Yeah, including me. And I've spoken now for the last 3 years. We write articles. I had one published in USCCA's Concealed Carry magazine last July regarding the terrorist threat against hospitals.
I read it. Very good.
And I think that's something that's very timely, and I think it's something, unfortunately, we're going to see happen in the United States within the next year or two. And so we really have to get our acts together about trying to get rid of gun-free zones, and try, you know, and this is why I'm here, because I'm, you know, gun-free zones, I think, are immoral and they're evil. And it's all it does is it disarms the good guy.
Absolutely.
And gives the bad guy a free rein. So we've got to, you know, we've got to fight for that kind of stuff. And we got to educate people that so that they can talk to their representatives and get things changed.
I think you're one of the first people I've heard call gun-free zones immoral and evil.
They are. They're absolutely immoral. And that was in my first article that I wrote that was in San Antonio Medicine. I talked about the immorality of gun-free zones in hospitals.
I guess I didn't read that article.
Well, it's because you probably didn't get San Antonio Medicine.
And yet, maybe I should get San Antonio Medical.
Yeah, actually, I'll give you the link. I'll send it to you.
To all the other doctors that are listening to this, how much is a membership at DRGO?
DRGO's membership is $35 a year, and it's tax deductible. We are part of the Second Amendment Foundation, so it's part of SAF.
Yeah, that's cool. So you're also supporting SAF, which is a top-notch organization. John, thank you. We'll do some more after the last day tomorrow.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, we're done with the entire 3 days of Red Dot Pistol School, John Adine back again. How you feeling?
I'm feeling actually pretty good. The last day, I think things came together pretty well. A lot of putting together the first 2 days, and then, you know, of course, doing more movement and long-distance shooting and really figuring out the capabilities of that red dot on the pistol.
That's pretty much what it was. I think we all kind of discovered exactly what we could do, and even the speed. A lot of us increased our speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can really, you know, when we were running that steel and going down the different the row of steel, we were really making our hits quickly and making our transitions quickly and being pretty accurate. There weren't too many misses.
So, John, this was your first real class with a red dot, right?
Yeah. In fact, I didn't have a red dot on the pistol until you guys called me out in an episode. So I ordered the slide that night and put the red dot on the pistol.
You were quicker than me because I got called out on the same podcast, and it took me about a month to order mine.
Well, you know, I'm a surgeon. I make decisions on a daily basis. You know, I don't waste time. I don't have no. I just go do it.
My biggest takeaway today was just refining everything. My presentation got a little faster. I was picking up the dot even quicker. I figure I shot probably about slightly over 700 rounds. What about you?
Yeah, it was probably 750, somewhere in there.
So my G19 with the red dot's got about a 700 round trigger job. So I'm close.
Yeah, I'm getting there too. Except I need a new trigger for that. My G19 is not doing too well.
Okay, tell people what happened to your trigger.
Well, I think it's running real heavy, even with the stock springs. It's running almost 8 pounds, and so I think there's an issue with the trigger. So I'm probably going to go with a Suarez flat trigger.
But is yours the stock G19 trigger?
It's a G20, a G17.
But is it the stock connector?
Yes, stock connector.
And stock springs?
Yep. Yeah, I was running it with a minus connector and a New York 1, and it was, you know, 7 pounds, and wasn't running right. And, you know, my Gen 3s run it like, you know, 6 pounds with that same setup. So there may be something with the Gen 4 and the minus connector. I think the geometry is a little bit different, and with the New York 1, it just doesn't run the same way. So I think I'm going to go to that flat trigger. Fortunately, John had a couple of pistols with the flat face trigger that Suarez has, and I think it's pretty nice. It also changes the direction of pull. It brings you straight back.
And yeah, which actually...
For me, that's important, because part of what I was doing is I think I was over-pulling the trigger and shooting a lot to the left and a little bit low left. I managed to get it smoothed out fairly well, but it took a lot of concentration to get it right. And I think with a, you know, with a decent trigger, I wouldn't have to pull quite so hard, and I think I'd be less likely to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And if I remember right, your RMR is the model 06?
Correct.
Yeah, mine's the model 07. I like your 06. I like that smaller dot.
Yeah, I think the reason first of all, I didn't go out and buy them. I actually had them on some ACOGs. But I like the 3.5 dot just because I think you can get a more precision shot if distance. When you start going with a bigger dot, you start hiding more of your target, and so you lose your precision. So, it's bright, and your eye picks it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and for people who might not know what we're talking about, the RM06 and the RM07 by Trijicons, they are either auto-adjusting or you can manually adjust the intensity of the dot.
Right, and so, and the way you do that is you hold the buttons, both buttons down for 3 seconds, and that turns the unit off. And then you hold it down for 3 seconds again, and when you let it go, the light comes on, and now it's self-adjusting.
Now it's self-adjusting. And I learned something today, too. I decided to spend half the day without my corrective eyeglasses, and I wanted to see how that would work. And, you know, the dot looks a lot different. I have astigmatism in my eyes. And so the dot was way oversized. So that was kind of nice to have the adjustable. So I had to actually reduce the intensity of the dot. And I strongly suggest that for people who do wear eyeglasses, you need to train without your glasses as well, whether you're running iron sights or Trijicon RMR.
I would correct that and say, without corrective lenses, you still need to wear safety glasses.
That's what I meant. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Just, without corrective lenses.
Right. I just wanted to clarify that because we don't want people shooting fire, especially if you're shooting steel without protective eyewear. You can get splashback in your eyes very easily.
Yeah. But practice with no corrective eyewear. If you wear contacts, take them out. Put some good safety glasses on, and practice shooting that way.
Yeah, I think that that's valid. You know, if you get into a, you know, an event where you're ambushed and your glasses come off and you've never shot without, you know, non-correction, you may have a problem.
Well, some final things I want to say about this. I can't emphasize enough how ridiculously easy the red dot makes shooting past 20 yards. It just, you know, compared to iron sights at that distance, there's just absolutely no comparison.
Yeah, and I think it helps you acquire your target. Well, actually, it allows you to acquire your target and then overlay the red dot. So for people with more senior eyes, I think that's really an advantage. You need to be able to focus on the threat and put the overlay the red dot, and then you press the trigger. You don't have to worry about focusing on a front sight. With middle-aged eyes, that's often a difficult task. And, you know, and you had Grant Cunningham on, you know, several months ago talking about the blurry front sight, the blurry rear sight, and the sharp target. And if you can see that distance, that's great. But if you have a problem with that, then you can at least overlay the red dot on the blurry target and let fly. And I think the other thing that the red dot does is it really accentuates the need for good trigger press and good trigger control.
Oh, man, boy, did it ever show you when you're really jerking the trigger? I mean, that red dot will dance like nobody's business, and it really, if nothing else, I'll tell you what, it's a fantastic training tool.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, when we were shooting in odd positions, you know, we shot from prone, left side, right side, kneeling, whatever. But when you're on your side, you don't have to get that red dot in the middle of the window. As long as you can see the red dot and it's overlaying the target and you press a good trigger press, you're going to get a hit.
You're going to get a hit. And we proved that because we were shooting in all kinds of strange positions at steel from about 25 yards.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was pretty remarkable how simple it was. Again, as long as you had a good trigger press, you are making good hits.
Yeah. All right, John, let's shift gears for a little bit. In about a month from today, you and me and Ben Branham, we're jumping in a rental SUV, and we're headed up to Little Rock, Arkansas for the Rangemaster Tactical Conference. You looking forward to that?
Oh, that's going to be awesome. It's my first one, and so I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of people who I've heard about, but I haven't met, you know, guys like South Nark and all these, you know, awesome people.
William April.
Yeah, William April. He's, you know, I got to hit him up for DRGO.
Yeah, exactly.
poor William April. Sorry if you're listening to this, but I'll come talk to you.
A couple things I plan on taking there is I want to take Spencer Keeper's appendix carry class. And, even though I've been appendix carrying for a long time, I've actually never taken a appendix carry specific class. That's one. And I want to take the backup gun instruction as well.
Yeah, I mean, my body habits does not conform to appendix carry at this stage in my life, although I'm working on it.
I'm working on it too.
Yeah, but I want to actually want to learn a little bit of the hands-on jiu-jitsu kind of things, you know, because that's an area where I actually don't have a lot of experience. I've never, you know, took karate or any of that kind of stuff when I was a kid.
So neither did I.
So hands-on type of stuff I think is important for me to at least get an idea. I took MAG 80 with Masada Ayub last summer, and we did a lot of, you know, weapons retention and weapons takeaways, and that was the second class that I've taken like that. But that was extensive, and it was, you know, very, very well done. And so it was kind of an eye-opening thing. But, you know, you have to be in condition to do this stuff.
Oh, yeah, you do. And speaking of training, I asked you during class today, I think it was during lunch, how many hours of training would you say that you've now taken?
Probably close to 550.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Not me. I haven't taken 550.
Yeah. I'm a training junkie. I admitted that a long time ago.
Yeah, but, you know, your skill level shows it, John. I mean, you've really learned some amazing stuff. And you know, 550 hours of training. I mean, man, some people never even take 5 hours of training.
Right. You know, I think it's important when you're getting training to get different people's perspective. And, you know, this person does things this way. Another person does things almost the opposite way. And you have to figure out what works for you. And so, you know, if you're not introduced to it, you may not think of it. And, you know, doing, you know, the Suarez stuff, you know, the first time I did a Suarez class was with you. I did the CRG2.
Yeah.
Several years ago. And yep. that was revolutionary to me because of the amount of movement that we did. Yes. I've done Rob Pincus where you get off the X, but you stop and shoot.
Yeah.
Whereas that, you know, with the Suarez class, you get off the X and you're shooting as you're moving.
As you're moving.
And yeah. you keep shooting until the threat's down.
And there's, and both of those are good.
Right.
They have, but you they should have learn advantage. Both of those.
Yeah. They have their advantages at yeah. certain times. I mean, obviously, if you're in a close quarters, you can't be doing a lot of shooting. You can't be doing a lot of movement.
No,
you can
can't.
Get off the X, but then you got to get the shot off.
Correct.
And so, and we did that in class that we did last. When was it? When it was hotter than hell? What was that? Was that September? Or?
Oh, that was September 17th of 2016. Yeah. On September 17th, we had 100 degree weather.
Oh, it was miserable. But,
yeah, it was.
But we were doing a lot of confined space
right.
movement, and I think that, you know, you have to have the tools in the toolbox
yep.
in order to be able to react to something that's not planned.
Now, I got to ask you a question. When you took the art of the first hit that I taught in September, remember I had you guys working on headshots?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you notice that paid off this weekend?
Oh, absolutely.
Because we did a lot of headshots this weekend.
We blew out a lot of heads in those cardboard targets, I'll tell you that. And we were doing, you know, five shot rapid groups, and then two or three to the head. Boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom, boom, boom.
And yes, learning headshots is necessary.
Yes.
For the people who don't think it is, you know, I want you to picture something. Hey, guys, I want you to picture, I hate to say this, but I got to tell the truth. That's the way I am. What if a hostage taker has your wife hostage, and all you can see is his head? Are you going to take the shot? Well, you better. And can you make the shot? You better.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, and I'm going to go back to where I've been before, you know, the terrorist threat is out there. And, you know, a lot of these guys may be wearing body armor. You may only have a headshot.
Yeah.
You may only have a headshot or a pelvic shot. And, you know, a pelvic shot doesn't always necessarily put him down right away. A headshot, if you hit the brain box, is going to turn the lights off, and that's it. You
yeah.
end the threat immediately.
Even, you know, even ladies who carry, you know, what if you're out with your kids and, hey, I'm sorry, we all know young kids, they can roam away from you, and they can roam away from you real quick sometimes when you're not even knowing it. And then what if all of a sudden there's a bad guy after him?
Yeah.
You've got to make a shot. You got to make a long shot. You got to make the shot now. And
you got to make it count.
And you got to make it count. You know, can you perform on demand like that?
And the only way you can do that is with practice. You got to do dry practice, and you got to take instruction, and you got to have somebody see what you're doing and help you correct whatever problem you may have. None of us are perfect. I certainly am not. I struggle with my trigger press all weekend long.
Yep.
And finally, by the end of the day, I got it squared away. But it was, you know, if you don't have somebody come help you when you're having a problem and you don't practice, when the time comes, you know, you may not be up to the task. And that's why you need to practice.
And I'm going to put it out there. I learned a lot from these 3 days at this Red Dot Pistol School. I'm going to be making some videos for the Shooters Club probably in the next couple of weeks, some new ones, some new videos that are based off of some of the stuff that John covered with us today, because I know that we covered some things today that Ben and I have not put up there. So for all the Shooters Club members, you'll be seeing that soon.
Good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Good review.
Yeah, it is. John, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Don't forget Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership
at
ergo.us.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Have a good one.
Okay, many thanks to John Dean. I appreciate that, Doc. And don't forget, Doctors Responsible for Gun Ownership, drgo.us. I got another email I want to talk about before I close the show here. Tony from New Hampshire sent me an awesome email. He said, Bob, first of all, thank you for your podcast. He says, question, I am on the road as a salesperson just like you. I'm looking for a new handgun for deep concealment. I have to wear a tucked-in shirt with no cover garment, and also I'm not allowed to have holster clips showing. So I believe I'm going to have to pocket carry. Oh, and also I wear Wrangler jeans, if that helps. I would like to stay with 9mm, but I'm open to all ideas and suggestions. Can you help me based on your traveling experience? Tony, one of the best pocket guns that it is actually the best I own, and it's one of the best pocket guns I've ever shot. It's not a 9mm. It's a 380. It's a Carr P380. And I tell you, with today's 380 ammo, 380 is okay. Okay? That's my belief. With the good ammunition that we have today, no problem with 380. There's absolutely no reason why you can't hide a Carr P380. If you want to get something a little bit more budget-friendly, I think the Ruger LCP2, the Ruger LCP2, I got one of those, and it was on the last day of last year, December 31st, because I said I wasn't going to buy any more guns in 2017. So on the last day of 2016, I got a Ruger LCP2. I really like it. I really like it. Nice little gun. That's also a great pocket gun, but it's a 380. Tony, you might want to consider the Carr PM9 if you want to have a 9mm. You also might want to think about a Smith & Wesson 6.42-38 Special revolver. I have the Performance Center model, the Smith & Wesson 6.42 Performance Center. It's got fantastic grips and a delightful trigger, It's only 5 rounds. That's the downside, but 38 has just as much effectiveness as a 9mm. All those, I think, are very good pocket guns, Tony. Thanks very much. I wear those. I use those guns in my pocket. You know, it's rare that I pocket carry. But, Tony, when my shirt has to be tucked in, when I'm going into a corporate-level meeting, which I go into sometimes, when I'm going into a sales call where it's just very, very important that I not get made carrying a gun. Usually it's one of my pocket 380s or it's the Smith & Wesson 6.42 Performance Center revolver. Just get a good pocket holster and I think you're going to be fine. Folks, if you like this show, if my podcast helps you, I think it does. A lot of people say that it does. I would love to get your support. It does take time. It does take a little bit of money. Mostly it's the time. And most people who do podcasts know how much time it takes to actually put these together and edit them. And I love doing this, folks. I love doing this. But if you want to financially support me, several ways you can do it. One is a really cool method. You don't even have to spend any extra money. If you're going to make an Amazon purchase, just go through my Amazon affiliate link. It's at handgunworld.com. Go to the Amazon store and use my Amazon affiliate link. You can save that link in your browser. You can save it in your smartphone. You can actually put it on your home screen. Then that way, every time that you go to Amazon and make a purchase, I'll be getting a little bit of a commission for that. The Shooters Club, you heard me talk about earlier in the episode. I'm going to be putting some new videos up there. Ben's got one he's putting up there for only $8 a month. Or $75 a year, you can become a member of the Shooters Club. We got a lot of good classes coming up this year. Dallas, Utah, Illinois, Wisconsin, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Ohio. Check it out. That's where we're traveling so far. So you can sign up for some of our classes as well. And last but not least, this costs no money whatsoever, but I'd love to get an iTunes review or whatever podcast software you use. Please put a review as to how you like the Handgun World podcast. I'll take positive, negative, or neutral feedback, whatever. I just like to get plenty of feedback. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster, but it exists in the hearts of men and women. Read your Bible every day and shoot straight. Shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Good.